Welcome to another episode of The Suspendables with funny man Jungle Jim Jerome and retired NHL star Russ Cortinel.
Here's Cortinel. He scores! Cortinel!
Each week they unleash their raw, stripped-down, unfiltered opinions on all things hockey and maybe other stuff too. Who knows? Inside stories, absolutely. Outrage, guaranteed. Offside, for sure. And always plenty of laughs. Strap in. The Suspendables is coming at you right now.
Come on there, fucknuts. Wind up the show.
There you go. It's you. It's you, Russ Cortinel, doing the intro. It's me, Jungle Jim, the host of The Suspendables. And here we are again, a little late this week. But nonetheless, we will bang out another show. Rusty, how are you doing? You came through July 4th.
Yes, July 1st, July 4th. You know, it's great. It's
like you've never been one to shy away from a couple of holidays.
No way. It's like having back-to-back New Year's Eve parties.
Yeah, exactly. What happens there, Canada Day? Are there a bunch of Canada Day, as everyone says? what'd you guys do?
We had a dinner for a lot of Canadians that are here in Idaho, and Frank and Tammy Surian threw it for us, and so there was a good mix of Canadians there, and we sang the anthem, we ate and drank, and it was shocking. And then on the 4th, Ray Whitney hosted a party, and again a bunch of Canadians came over and a few Americans and my family, who are the kids are have dual citizenship, and my wife, who's American, and so we hung out and did the exact same thing again.
Yeah, lovely.
Yeah.
No fireworks, Russ, down there. They canceled them all here. There's fireworks.
Yeah, there's fireworks. Freaking kids have drank all my black cherry, so I'm now on to raspberry.
Oh, there you go.
Well, I might have drank them, but I'm blaming the kids.
Blame it on the kids, man. Blame it on the kids.
There was a lot of fireworks. They were private. They didn't have the public fireworks shows that they normally have in the cities. So it was more families getting together. But there was a lot of fireworks on the lake.
Right.
In and around Lake Coeur d'Alene, you could see fireworks, and yeah, it was nice.
Jeez, I saw my heart dropped. Two planes collided.
Know, and you know the weird thing. Well, it's a horrible story, but
totally.
So we were all getting ready to go golfing around 2:20 in the afternoon, and this fire truck went by, and we thought, and the sirens were going, and Paris said, well, that there's either a fire or an accident. And then the next thing we heard a couple hours later, friends from around the country were sending us media clips from different outlets.
Yeah, including me.
Yeah. And it was saying two planes collided on Lake Coeur d'Alene. And so other than that, the news coming from outside sources, I have not heard a lot of people here talking about it. It's weird. Yeah. It's a big lake. It's 142 miles of lake frontage, so it's not like a little lake. Right. But anyways, it's a terrible story.
Yeah. I think there were eight fatalities. Yeah. Two planes crashed. And well, I was the same, and I read it. I immediately got on my phone. I'm glad you're safe, and our hearts go out to the people who've been affected by that, which will be numerous. You think you have problems, you know, until you hear something like that. On the show today, Rusty, we're going to talk about a few things. The first one I put down, Patrick Mahomes from the Kansas City Chiefs signed a $500 million deal. July 4th parties we talked about, huge contract. The NHL is starting up. They've set the date, so we're going to get the details on that. And the other thing, Russ, everyone's putting up a big stink now about the Washington Redskins. They got to change their name. That owner from the Skins has been
Schneider. Schneider,
one of the most unpopular owners. Everyone seems to get down on this guy and give him a hard time about everything. So we'll talk about that. We got some shout-outs. We got our Facebook page, The Suspendables, and we've made it very easy for you now to buy our merch. People have been reaching out to, how do I get it? And there's a great selection of stuff there. The logo is super cool. It came out really well for the hats and T-shirts and hoodies and anything you want, coffee mugs.
Yeah, let me know how those feel, because obviously whoever you sent mine with is walking. He must be stuck at the border. He's walking from
Alberta. Don't say it's taking long. People are going to think it takes too long.
To Idaho, and he's stuck at the border because I'm wearing a Lake Club Gazer Ranch hoodie when I could be wearing a Suspendables.
Well, there's a shop now button on there. It's very easy. We had it all fixed up. So just go on the Facebook page. I just hung up the phone from your brother, Jeff.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, so I get in my car. I got Bluetooth in my car like everybody else in the world.
Shocker.
And I when I jump in there, random shows, episodes of The Suspendables just come up out of nowhere. And I was driving along, and the interview we did with Jeff, your brother, came on. And if you haven't heard it, folks, you got to go back and listen to it. I forget the number of what show that was, but... man, is he funny.
Yeah.
Man, is he funny. And I knew what was coming, Russ.
Yeah.
I even knew what was coming. I started laughing my head off. Interesting guy, Russ, your brother, Jeff. When you sort of hear him telling this, how he spent his days playing hockey when he was young, you kind of go, what, did he just tell me that he would get up in the morning, go do a job that he had, like... I don't know, shoveling gravel or taking shit to the
building
dump.
Building the fence.
Then go to practice. Then go have lunch. Then go back and do some other job that he had, like hauling garbage or something.
Yeah.
And then, I don't know, do something in the evening with some other job. That's not false, is it? That's how he...
No. He used to say when we were young that the problem with playing hockey was you had so too much free time, and... it drove him crazy because he loves to work.
Right.
He really, truly enjoys it. And one of his businesses was on game days, he would switch cars with guys and he'd charge them 10 or 20 bucks to change their oil and filters. So he'd be out there while those guys were sleeping in the afternoon, he'd be changing the oil and filter on their car. And then... he would bring it back for the game night and switch the car and get 20 bucks. And then that would be his beer money for the night and pizza money. But he was funny. He was always like that. He had a lot of little companies that did well in the off season. And one time he used to have NHL charters he used to charter fishing trips out of Victoria.
Yep.
And he had all these pamphlets on the BC ferries that he advertising, he'd advertise NHL charters, and that, he'd show up and it was Jeff Courtneau who was playing probably at the time in Washington or Boston, probably more like Boston. So these guys, and a lot of them came from the Alberta or mm-hmm. Down south and the United States, and they'd go show up and go, you really are an NHL player. I thought it was just the initials of a company, but it was an actual player.
Funny. Yeah. Or who would expect an active guy?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, we didn't make a lot of money when we first started playing, but it was a lot of money at that time, but it wasn't, comparable to 10 years later, it was nothing.
What you would just never think a guy who's an active player in the NHL would be running charters, as a business in the summers and yeah, good for him. You can tell that he's one of these guys that absolutely 100% cannot stand sitting still.
No,
because when I brought it up, I said, "So what's going on? What's happening out there? The COVID and everything." He says, "Oh, I can't do anything. It's driving me nuts. I got to I can only run so far and exercise, and I'm doing nothing. Fuck all. I got nothing going on."
Yeah,
and you could tell he's like dying to get going on stuff, but. Anyway, check out that Check out that interview. I don't know if Steve can look it up, but I forget what show it is. But it's within the last 10 shows that are coming up. So, Rusty, this contract that Mahomes, the quarterback for Kansas City, signed is a 10-year deal that can equate to over $500 million. For sure, it's $477 million that the guy's mm-hmm. going to make with. Now, if that's – I always get a kick out of this, Russ. It's like, okay, it's going to mean $477 million over 10, mm-hmm. but a potential $25 million can kick in for bonuses.
Yeah.
How big do they get? Oh, how big does it get, Russ, where a guy needs a bonus, you know? Or
the only thing that they don't really talk about that contract is $150 million of it is guaranteed. The rest isn't. So as John Elway says to Ray Whitney and Brendan Morrow when they golf at Gozer, he loves playing hockey players for money because NHL money is guaranteed.
Right. That's funny. That's funny, yeah. And who, you know what? Who knows with it? Because he's been injured, right, in his young career. I mean, he won a Super Bowl, of course, and yeah, you know, threw for 5,000 yards or something last year. He's an incredible guy.
Yeah.
He's the biggest quarterback.
Great athlete.
But
and you know what? Hopefully he makes it all. But, you know, and $150 million,
that's okay, guaranteed.
Right? $150. Poor guy.
It's laughable.
$15 million a year.
Yeah, it's laughable. It's just like, oh my God.
A reminder, the Suspendables are engaged on Facebook. Your comments are welcome always.
When you think about those contracts, Rusty, if you were like, it's nothing, right, for a guy in the NHL right now to make, what, 4 or 5 million, right? It's mm-hmm. nothing, right? People don't sneeze at that. 6-7 million is everyday shit. Connor McDavid, I think, is 12 or 13 million.
Yeah.
There'd be some, you know, so
some 14s.
What's that?
Some guys making 14. I think Austin Matthews and a couple guys there. Three of the players there are making just a ton of
right.
dough.
If you look at it now, Russ, and you got to slot yourself in there in terms of skill, you know, where you were in your day, I mean, you were a star for sure. Would have you been a top 50 player, Russ, in the league?
I don't know about top 50, but I've told the story on the show before that in Montreal, I got signed and I was the 20th highest paid player in the league. And then, you know, 2 months later, I was probably 40th, but how I, you know, look at my career is on each. I explained this one night at a banquet in Edmonton. I made a comment about myself, and the guy kind of he ripped me, politely ripped me, and didn't think I was as good as a player as maybe I thought I was.
Right.
And he misunderstood me because I said it's great when you're an all-star. When you're treated like a star, but when your career starts to slide and then you're at the bottom of the pile, it sucks. And he said something, and I said, no, I meant I was one of the top on each team I played. I was top five in scoring every year, pretty much. And so I was considered one of our better players on each team that I played on. I wasn't saying I was an all-star in the league. I was saying I was one of the stars on my team. And so the guy... He misunderstood what I was saying. So that's how I always career. And you know, some years I might not have been, especially my first couple of years. But then in my prime, for sure, I was in top five. Couple times I led my team in scoring, once in Toronto, once in Montreal.
Yep.
And when I played with Medano, we were top. You know, he was always the top scorer, and I was either second or, you know, right close to him. Mm-hmm. So that's how I rate. That's how I rated. I rate myself in my career is that I was one of the better players, I think, on my team.
We've asked this before. What did you make in your biggest year, Russ?
$1.5 million biggest year. Yeah, I kept missing my free agent moments due to injuries or I wasn't playing as up to my right. capability. When I was ready to hit the free agency mark at 30, and we had a lockout that year, and they changed it to 32. So I had to wait two more years, and I was getting 79, 80 points at that time. And I was second to Modano on my team in scoring and led the team in assists. And right. so that would have been when I would have really cashed in and got I would have been able to go to any team, and I would have signed for a lot more than I was making at the time, which was $1.5 million. And then 2 years later, I had some bad luck, and it is what it is, but you know, I have no regrets. I just missed out on those key opportunities when I was playing well and
because of injury.
They moved the free agency from 30 to 32, so I had to wait two more years.
Oh, right.
I had already played 12 years in the league.
Right.
I started when I was 18, so you know I had to wait. And then I'm in my 14th year, and I didn't have I had an injury, and then got traded. And,
tilt.
Yeah. Thanks for bringing it up. But so it hurt for a while, but I don't, it doesn't bother me. You know, it doesn't bother
you. You bring up an interesting thing. So there's no doubt in my mind, I don't need to ask you that, you ended up unintentionally and because of bad luck, leaving a lot of money on the table, right?
No, I didn't. It didn't happen. So there was, you know, just right. didn't happen. I didn't leave any money on the table. It just didn't happen.
How much does luck come into it, Russ, that a guy does get to, you know, sign a giant deal?
Well, they got to have a great year, and the timing has to be right. And you got to have a team that knows you're free agent and they're willing to allow you to succeed. Because right. if the coach goes, yeah, well, we're going to put you on this line and your numbers aren't great. So some luck. The team who knows you're playing out your contract has to be behind you and let you play. And because if the coach and the management don't want a player to do well, they can make it happen, because they can just put you on a shitty line or with a partner, or if you're a goalie, they can, you know, they don't get all the starts you want. So you need the platform to do well. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, you got to stay healthy and hopefully have a great year. And my brother Jeff, he nailed it twice. St. Louis, he played in Vancouver, and St. Louis signed him to a big deal. Mm-hmm. And then he was in St. Louis, and they were going to let him go. And then he signed another big deal. So he had back-to-back really incredible contracts at that time. And did really well in free agency.
Is that a grim reality, Russ? Does that happen where they there can be some sort of politics in it and go, okay, fucking move this guy down
for sure.
Another line.
Well, it happened to me in Vancouver. I played on a line with Trevor Linden and Martin Jelena, and we were a really good line.
Good players, and yeah.
Martin Jelena had a record year that year. Trevor Linden had a lot of points. I did well. We had a great line. And the next year...
Did you make the playoffs?
We lost to Colorado, who ended up winning the Stanley Cup that year.
Oh, okay. Yep.
And then the next year, Tom Rennie came in, and I found myself on the third line. Never played one shift with the line that I'd played pretty much every game with the year before. I never penalty killed with Pavel Bure, and we were arguably one of the most exciting penalty kill units in the league, and it just was tilted in not in my favor. And
why did that happen, Russ?
I don't know. I think there's some. I don't know. There's. I don't know if I really want to say, but I think there was a couple people in the organization that might have felt that they, you know, might not have wanted me to have success that year. Yeah. I don't know. It was weird. And then new coach comes in and they see the team differently. You know, we had in front of me on the right wing, we had both Pavel Bure and Alexander Mogilny. And they thought when they traded for Alex that he could play on the left wing, and he couldn't. He was a right winger, and so mm-hmm. it just there wasn't a lot of ice time. So what I would have done if I was in their position is I would have just traded me at the beginning of the year and moved me rather than not, you know, I just didn't get the ice time that I was getting. And behind those two superstars, it kind of expected it. But it was just odd that we had such success the year before.
Right.
That why would you break up that line? It was just, anyways, it is what it is, but it happens. It happens to players for sure that they don't get that amount of ice time that they might have got before or what have you. But it's better to try to sign, and if you want to stay in a city, it's better to try and sign. But
right, I can sense that obviously the Rene never gave you an explanation of it. He just, that's the way it was.
Yeah, it was just his decision. He came in, new coach out of junior hockey, I think, and he had a, you know, he had an idea in his head how he was going to run the team, and he totally changed the system, and it didn't really work. And it was, and Tom learned as he spent more time around professional athletes how to treat mm-hmm. people. We had a nice conversation when I was Jeff and I were giving an NHL award out in Vancouver, and he was there. And he said, you know, he was coaching the New York Rangers, and he goes, I learned a lot along the way. I now really understand the NHL professional player better today than when I coached in the early days. And we all make rookie mistakes. We all, you know, when we're new to something, we always, you know, we learn from those mistakes and we get better. And Tom admitted to that. And, you know, one of the funny things, I've told this story on the show, but he said when he took over, there'll be no drinking on our chartered flights. And Pat Quinn always had a full bar cart that went up and down the aisle after games. You know, and yeah, obviously after a loss, guys aren't partying, but you know, after a win, the guys want to sit around, have a few beers, and talk about the game. And it was fun and play cards. But after a loss, it's really quiet on a plane. Guys right. know, you know, you're not celebrating after a freaking loss. But after wins, on the road especially. So Tom Rennie says, no beers, no alcohol at all on the airplane. So, of course, we had Esa Tikkanen on our team, and the media came running over, and it was in Whistler, our training camp. They come running over to Esa Tikkanen and said, Tick, what do you think of the coach is taking all the alcohol off the plane, no more alcohol on the charters after games? And he goes, I get a doctor note.
I don't think you've told that.
No,
before.
I've for sure told this story. Anyways, I'm telling it again because it is worth repeating. And Tick was notorious. He was my roommate, and on the road. And oh my God, he just loved to have fun. I mean, that guy would go out in the city and he'd
stay
up.
Well, he was nuts, man.
Oh, he was nuts. He had energy like nobody, and yeah. He was a great player. But he definitely had. He didn't miss too many fun nights.
I was with him at a party when he played in Edmonton. Craig McTavish might have been a Super Bowl party or something at his house. Him and his wife, Debbie. And by the way, I am the immediate neighbor to Debbie's mother.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, Debbie McTavish's mother, Sharon, just turned 80, lives beside me. We went to a party there. There were two significant things that happened. I can't say this any more gracefully than this, that someone challenged Marty McSorley to drink some champagne or something, to drink like Mac T could get him going, you know?
Right.
And he said, I dare you to drink the whole bottle of champagne. Well, do you know what that's like, trying to drink a straight glass of bubbly? Okay. Never, you know?
Oh.
Anyway, I witnessed this and he said, okay, I'll do better than that. He drank the bottle. Puked.
Ugh.
Okay. Puked.
Of course.
Grabbed another bottle, started drinking that.
Of course.
And then took a little break while he was drinking the second one and started eating his own puke.
Oh, God. You tell the grossest stories. God.
Anyway, it was
It's the truth. Yeah, he said, you think you're tough, right?
That is sick. I almost vomited my White Claw up, and I'm definitely not eating it.
But Tick was there, too, and he got his hands on some fireworks. This is in the day they were illegal. And Mac T lived in a little cul-de-sac, and so we were all hanging out in front, you know, and smoking cigars and stuff and drinking beers and on the street in this little cul-de-sac. And next thing, it's like a bomb goes off. He didn't just have little firecrackers, okay? He had the industrial size that they set off on July 1st. And I'm not lying, Courts. He holds it in his hand at the bottom and lit it and just held it.
Oh.
Like, he goes, Statue of Liberty! Statue of Liberty, right? With this thing firing off. He was crazy, man, that guy.
Yeah, Marty. Marty and Kevin McClellan were two crazy guys. They used to smoke cigarettes in the bar. And then at the end of the cigarette, they would do something with their tongue, and they would eat it, lit. I'm telling you, had you ever see this?
Where they flip it into their mouth?
Yeah, no, it's in
Jesus.
And on they're smoking it.
Yeah.
And they pinch it between their lips.
Yeah.
Do something with their tongue, and then they flip it over with their tongue and they swallowed it. And they would, and Kevin McClellan would smoke like freaking 20 cigarettes. And he would eat every one at the end. Oh my God. It was, my brother Jeff and I would be like, well, first of all, we didn't know any hockey player until we turned pro who smoked cigarettes. You turn pro and then you go into the locker room and there's freaking six guys smoking cigarettes. You're like, oh my God, where am I?
What, were you really around that long where they smoked during intermission?
I've told this story before. I'll tell it again. John Brophy takes over as coach of the Toronto Maple Leafs and from Dan Maloney.
Yeah.
And he goes, boys, it's been a bit of a country club around here. We're going to change a few things.
Right.
The six guys that are smoking between periods in the bathroom, if you want to have a cigarette, get in the gym. So the guys who were sitting out would be riding the bike during the game, watching the game on TV. And the six guys that smoked would go in there and have one cigarette. Ally Afraidy would have two. So it was Chris Katsopoulos, Bob McGill, Jeff Brubaker, Ally Afraidy, Ken Raggett.
Look at you with the memory.
Bill Derlego. And then there would be the odd guy who just like Stevie Thomas. I don't know if Stevie smoked during the game, but he'd have a cigarette once in a while. And Gary Lehman would have a cigarette once. That's not hilarious. During games, but on the plane after. We had half our team. We had six guys that smoked in between periods. And then on the plane, we chartered these little 60-passenger prop jobs,
right.
Air Ontario.
Right.
And our whole coaching staff, trainers, and half the team was smoking. The next day at practice, I couldn't even breathe. Virgin lungs.
Yeah.
It's terrible.
Of course.
Welcome to the NHL, Russ.
All the coaches smoked back then.
Oh, my God. And my first coach was Nikoluk, and he smoked cigars. So you can imagine being on the airplane with the big cigar smoke.
Right.
Oh, my God. It was, anyways, fun times.
Yeah, well, Brian Kilray, right? One of my favorite stories. A mother drops her kid off. You know, Kilray, you know, they bust in the OHL.
You've told this story three times now.
Oh, yeah. Okay, you've heard it. Listen, okay. Listen.
We've all heard it.
Anyway, the mother wanted him to quit.
So he had to drive with the mom from get your stuff off the bus.
He said, get your kid off the bus. Yeah.
Yeah. And then drive him to the city to city.
Yeah, exactly. Then she had to take him there or put up with the smoke. Hilarious. I was going to ask you before we leave the contract thing, Russ, if you were an agent, I mean, there's not much challenge to a guy who's a superstar and is going to sign a Mahomes-type deal or Connor or Austin Matthews. You got a middle-of-the-road guy, Russ. You hear a lot of stories where these guys piss away the dough for whatever reason. What would be the number one advice, Russ, that you would give a player, or what would you look for in a contract? For a player, knowing what you know now, knowing what you went through, free agency, rookie year, injury, guaranteed, blah, blah, blah. What would you do?
Well, I think the biggest thing now is that they get such great advice from professional financial advisors. When we played, I mean, there wasn't many guys chasing around players for their money to invest, and so I think educating yourself on investing and saving and cost of living, and just making sure that you're enjoying your life, but you're also protecting yourself, because these kids today can set themselves up for life if they do the right things and try to stay away from the fancy stuff and
right,
you know, the
hopefully no booze or drug problem, right?
Well, yeah, obviously that doesn't matter if you have money or not. I mean,
right.
You've got to take care of yourself. And
right.
And so those things, you know, making sure you find the right partner in life that isn't taking advantage of you for the fame and wealth. Somebody who loves you for who you are and not
right.
what you do. And then finding somebody you can trust that will advise you how to invest and stay invested for your right. future. And a lot of these, when we start making money, we're single. We just came from, we don't have a lot of money. And then all of a sudden you start making money. And then, you know, a few years later, you're getting married and then you have kids and just things happen so quick.
Right.
Because you're so much further ahead of people your own age, just financially. You know, a lot of people sure. at that age are paying off a student loan and just starting out in a working career and usually not at the top. They're starting at the bottom and they hit their stride in their 40s, where these athletes are hitting their stride in their mid-20s.
Sure.
And
sure.
when you're 40, you're a heck of a lot smarter than when you're 25.
Right.
You've had
right.
experiences, you've seen good and bad things through your career, and then you're ready for that money to come. And, you know, a lot of these kids that make it come from blue collar families and didn't grow up with wealth. And so
right.
just surrounding yourself with good people. And
I'm trying to think, I'm trying to remember that there's been some crazy contracts that guys sign, not just money and term. You know, when it came along, Russ, that it took everyone by storm when Mario came along, that everyone was going out of their mind when a clause in the contract said, I I'm going to get paid this much, but I'm always going to be the highest paid guy in the league. I remember when that came along, and I was like, "There we go. There's a crazy thing to put in there." But it's only an agent doing his job. And back in the old days, I remember my dad was telling me Mahovlich and these guys. Some of them were pretty good. You know, some of those guys had shit in their contract. Like, I get a case of beer from Molson every week. You know, and stuff, shit like that. Did you hear of any crazy contracts, Russ, when you were playing hockey?
I think in Detroit, they were given guys, like the rumor before everything was exposed, because when we played, nobody was allowed to talk about their contracts. What we heard was Ilitch was giving guys pizza franchises because he owned Little Caesars.
Oh, really?
So everybody was envious of playing in Detroit because the guys were getting pizza franchises, and I don't know if that was ever true.
That is absolutely true.
Oh yeah,
because it is, because okay. Pat Hughes, who played in Edmonton, you would have played against Pat probably. He ended up in Detroit. He's a retired homicide detective.
Okay, jeez.
Is what he ended up finishing. But his gig was he went to Detroit and he got a pizza franchise.
No way.
I'm not kidding you. Yeah, I stay at. Sporadically, but I know Patty was a great guy. Yeah, he ended up being a cop
wow.
in downtown Detroit.
No way.
Yeah, not just a
oh
cop.
Oh, my God.
Homicide detective, yeah.
Jeez.
Crazy post-careers I've heard of. It makes me think, you know, some crazy things that guys did in their career. But
Gary Nyland is a firefighter, and he played till he was 30 and then became a firefighter in Vancouver. And he won an award for... saving a guy's life. He was out of gas and there was a big fire in Vancouver, a warehouse fire, and they were telling him to get out and leave the guys behind, and he saw a face. So he's out of oxygen,
right,
and he was first responder, obviously. And he saw a finger through the rubble, and he pulled this, reached down, pulled the guy's hand, and the other guy was underneath him. And he took these two guys, carried them out, saved their lives, and he got awarded in New York after 9/11. He got awarded something for his bravery.
It just gave me a shiver.
Yeah, I know. Isn't that cool?
That is amazing. He might have done that more than once.
Oh, well, he has some wild stories because first responders, obviously, you're seeing the toll of, you know, some crazy stuff. And, yeah, he saw it all in Vancouver. He's a great guy.
Someone I always have questions for you when you brought up those guys who smoked. Was it Gostopoulos that you played with? They wanted to know, Neil Fernie, a little shout out to Neil.
Yeah, Kotze.
Does he have any stories about Gostopoulos?
Yeah, so Kotze was great. He got traded for Stu Gavin.
Yeah.
And the best part about that trade was I got to switch to Stu's number, to number 9, my favorite number at the time. So I was, when I like Stu and he's a good guy and good you know, defensive player, really fast. But when he left, I was like in the office going, can I get the number 9? Dan Maloney was like, God, we just traded the guy. And, you know,
the number.
Yeah. Yeah. So anyways, Kotze comes in and he is a character. And so he's a smoker. And he didn't have the most athletic body, had a wicked slap shot. And, you know, was a defender that, you know, off the glass and out kind of guy, you know, no, you know, just simple hockey. And
right.
He used to stand in front of the mirror with his towel on after taking a shower. And he goes, you know, he's from the front, I don't look so bad, but when I turn sideways, oh, it's awful.
Isn't that great, eh? From an athlete.
Oh, he was... Kotze was great, and he always had a cigarette in his hand, and he talked with his hands. He's from Toronto. He's from the east side. And
right.
Just a flamboyant in his gestures, you know, like the way he spoke. And he was kind of like Bob McGill, like Kotze, you know, talking about himself. Well, Kotze's walking down the street, and I enjoyed playing with him. He spoke the truth, you know. He never held back, and
right.
And I enjoyed that about him. He was a good teammate.
Nothing like it. Nothing like when the guys are real, right?
Yeah.
Humble and never worried about their image.
Hang on, I'm getting another White Claw.
While you're doing that, we want to give everyone a chance to email us. thesuspendables@yahoo.com. We'd love to hear from you. You can follow me on Twitter, Jungle Jerome. You can follow Russ at The Suspendables.
We're down to the last White Claw in the fridge here.
Oh, we're almost done anyway, but we got to get to one more thing before we go. And thank you very much for everyone for listening. I got some shout outs. Neil Fernie, we mentioned him. You told the story about Gostopoulos, and Jamie Harms has been listening to the show for a long time. Coconut Sam, I look back at some of his tweets. He was down in the Dominican Republic listening to us back in the winter. He wanted to know if you've ever been in a movie, Russ. I think this may have come up before.
Pam, I did a guest spot on Pam Anderson's show, and I can't remember what it was called, but I did some guest spot on that.
That was the end? You know, that was your last hurrah?
Yeah, one and done.
One shot, one hit wonder. Yeah. Richard and Jill from Edmonton, and Jeff and Carrie, who live in Castlegar, BC. Thanks a lot for listening, and we appreciate all of you. So, Rusty, before we go and wrap it up, we got to talk about the NHL has finally, I never thought it would happen. Actually, I just thought the season would be wiped out. But no, Rusty, that is not the case. The NHL is ready to go. And so what I thought I would do, Russ, instead of me trying to break it all down, you can imagine the pain that would cause you, Russ, right now, if I was going to explain the way the 2014 format is going to work.
Oh, my God. Who's on first? What's on second?
So what we're going to do, a little break from protocol, we're going to bring on our producer, Steve, who knows all about this. You know what, Russ? The best move I ever made. right? I said, this will be music to Russ's ears. Don't get Jerome to fucking do it. So Stevie's going to come on and explain to us exactly the dates and what's happening and how it's going to work. Stevie boy?
Well, here's how it goes. You got three key dates. You've got Monday, July 13th is when the 24 teams will be in the postseason. That's when they'll start training camp. Then they travel to their two hub cities, Toronto and Edmonton, on July 25th. And then the games themselves, the playoffs, start on August the 1st with this weird play-in round. The league doesn't really consider them playoffs. Right. And if it all goes well, we should be awarding the Stanley Cup in early October.
Wow. So what's the weird playoff in, Stevie, before you hang up on me? Explain that.
So it's basically, they don't want to call it playoffs. What it is kind of a replacement for what would have been the last 10, 12 games of the regular season and all the jockeying for playoff position that would have occurred right there. So you basically got four series happening in the East, four series happening in the West, and the eight winners of those series move on to the real first round of the Stanley Cup playoffs, and the eight losers will all immediately have a chance at the number one overall selection in the draft, Alexis Lafreniere.
How stupid is that, Russ? Thanks a lot, Steve.
No problem.
Crazy.
How stupid is that, Russ? Yeah. The eight losers from that thing may have a shot at getting the first rounder.
Yeah, that. I think they should have just, for the draft, it should have been, okay, when the season ended with COVID, that's the positioning for the draft. I mean, why?
Simple.
Yeah, simple, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know why they're confusing it.
They overcomplicated the thing.
Yeah, right? They just complicate it.
Yeah. So what do you think, Rusty? Are you excited? We're going to have some live hockey here shortly. What do you think of the format? It's probably tough to suss out, but...
It'll be interesting. I mean, I've seen some golf without fans there.
You get used to it, though, after you watch a few couple hours of it.
Oh, what I did today is I just went and followed Brendan Morrow, Ray Whitney, John Elway, J.J. Dudum, a couple other guys. I followed them in a cart for a few holes, and they were like, what's up? I said, I'm just here to watch some golf.
Yeah, they're good players.
Yeah, they are.
Anyway, so live hockey. Are you all set for it? You must be semi-excited, aren't you?
Well, we'll see if they even play, but they've got a plan, and now the plan has to, you know, this whole COVID thing is, it's not done yet. You can't have players playing if seven guys on the team are sick.
Right.
So what's going to happen if 5 to 7 players on every team are sick or not? Yeah. Just test positive. What are you going to do? You can't let them play.
Right.
So we'll see if they even play.
Yeah. You bring up a point. Stevie there, our producer, who I do a little daily podcast with Steve. Not a little one. Called the Steve Warren Project. And we were talking about it this morning. And that's what I was saying, like, this is all fine and dandy, like you just said, Russ, until one fucking guy comes in and says, I'm positive, you know?
Yeah.
That's got to wipe out the whole thing. But you know what, Russ? I think everyone's done fine without sports. And they've come to realize that they don't need it. Okay. I don't care who you are. Like, I've heard lots of people, you know, funny, over the top. Oh my God, I'm going out of my mind. I can't watch my hockey or my golf or whatever. But really, really what it's come is that people don't need it. They haven't, you know, there are the case of some players who've sort of had some depression problems from it or stuff, stuff like that. But so that's kind of the way I think. But now that it's getting close, right? Yeah. I'm going, okay, I need it.
Yeah. Well, I think Gret said it best, is that weekends with football, it's an event. It doesn't, you know, it gets it. Family together and friends, and you know, Eric Kendricks, my daughter's boyfriend's here at Gosser. He just left today, and he went out on a boat tie up with the Adelson family,
right?
Steve and Tom and their kids, and they are the biggest freaking Viking fans, and they go, come join us. We've been friends since 08, and they're here at Gosser, obviously. So they're like, come out for a boat tie up.
What's a boat tie up?
Well, the boats just tie up and hang out and drink beer and listen to music, whatever.
Right.
And so they're all tied up, and when they pull up, they're all in their Minnesota Vikings gear. They are so fired up, and people look forward to watching something during the week, whether it's their own TV show or sports. And sports just brings people together. And I think Wayne said it best that, you know, you sit around, you wait for something like that, and then it comes and you get something to look forward to and you talk about and cheer for. And
right.
It's a release from the stress of their, you know, lives. So...
Well, we'll see. My opinion was they should have just called the whole thing off because I think they're doing it too soon. But like I say, when I go there, I'm going, fuck, this could be great. We may be flipping on some live.
Yeah. Live hockey. Watching in the summer.
If I got it once, I've had it 10 times that someone sent me, I don't know what it is, but it's a video of a guy in some foreign language. And they've dubbed over top of him. Like he's talking about the two cities that got picked for the NHL playoffs. Look it up on YouTube. That's all you need. Plug in those words like I just said. And he's talking about, so they wanted to make, for example, they wanted to make it fun for, you know, so Toronto obviously was a place to go. And then he talks about Edmonton. and pal, you got to look it up, Russ. Gret sent it to me. It goes on and on. And it's,
send it
it's,
to me.
Okay, I'll send it to you. It's hilarious. Okay, Rusty Boy, another show in the books. You get back to doing what you're doing. You're working hard this week, huh? You're working. You guys are busy.
Yeah, we're busy here.
What's with high-end real estate selling out these days? Jesus, man.
Well, Discovery Land Company offers a safe, fun environment where people can go and enjoy. And so during COVID, people with that kind of money have been buying at all our properties.
Rich people, Russ. Okay, rich people.
Wealthy,
people
have fun. Wealthy.
Wealthy. And, okay, wealthy, sorry.
Yep. They've been buying up properties, and you know, people are getting used to working from home, and so we've done very well, and Gosser especially has done really well this summer, so it's a good place to be right now.
Cool. Well, thanks a lot, Rusty, and thanks everyone for listening. Again, the suspendables at yahoo.com. Drop us an email, and I'll tell you this. If you enjoy the show, please tell all your friends about it. If you don't, keep your fucking opinion to yourself, okay? All right. You have a good week, Rusty. We'll talk to everybody next time. You've been listening to The Suspendables.
Attaboy, Jimmy.
Thank you, Rusty.
The Suspendables is a weekly hockey series with Jim Jerome in Edmonton and Russ Cortinel in L.A. A new episode every Tuesday morning on Wooshka, iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Follow The Suspendables on Facebook and Twitter. Reach us at thesuspendables@yahoo.com. And of course, we appreciate you sharing this podcast with your group of friends.